Coming up on today's show,
Dare to be ordinary. Everybody thinks they have to be something they're not. But God made each of us inherently unique. So when you think you're being ordinary and you're being plain and you're being boring, that's the only time that you're truly unique is because you're being who you are.
Another lonely lover, let's soften implode. Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Remember, too, about the other free option for interaction with this show that I've been mentioning lately, Featured Up, which you can find a link to in this episode's description. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Nashville, my guest is a singer, songwriter, guitar player, and CMA member who has a new single coming out next week, Friday, August 2nd. He has opened for some of country music's hottest names, including Chris Stapleton, Walker Hayes, Jake Owen, Cole Swindell, Brothers Osborne, and more. Presently, he is doing exactly that, playing live with upcoming dates from Tennessee to Georgia to both Carolinas and even over in Denmark, plus the Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival in the Florida Panhandle, followed by a date in Alabama. His top five songs on Spotify alone have a combined total of over 1 million streams, and similarly, he has a combined total of over 1.1 million video views on his official YouTube channel. You've been hearing a song of his called Better at Heartbreak. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Matt Rogers.
Hey, Bruce, how are you?
Wonderful, Matt. Thank you so much for making time to be on the show. We've been long overdue to do this.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Let's get started by having you share with the audience all about the song of yours that was just playing called Better at Heartbreak.
Yeah. So, country music's always good for a good breakup song. You can always count on a country music artist to put out a good breakup song. I had that idea for a while, and I was kind of sitting on it. And last year, when I went over to Denmark for the National Nights International Songwriters Festival, I went a few days early to write with major label artists all over Scandinavia. So Finland, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, of course. And we wrote a ton of songs, and I kind of was running through my idea book and running out of ideas. So I just threw this one out with a couple of Danish writers and Miss Aaliyah Good from Nashville as well. And that's where it came from Denmark. Kind of wild.
So since I was talking over it and the audience couldn't hear the lyrics, just give us kind of some insight as to the story that's being told in that song.
It's kind of a personal reflection about everybody at some point in their relationships thinks that they're probably the problem. You know what I mean?
Mm.
So that's kind of that reflective look of, is it like, man, is it me? Am I the reason I can't be happy? Am I the reason I can't find a good relationship? Maybe I'm just better at heartbreak.
And audience, I hope you've been with me for a while. Thank you if you have been. And when you just heard Matt mention Aaliyah Good as one of the co-writers on that song, she was on this show back in March of last year on episode 472. So do go back and listen to that interview if you never heard it. There's more that will come out as this interview goes along in terms of more that I could have included in the intro that would have caused it to go on and on and on. For example, Matt, you are a Georgia Country Awards Artist of the Year, which, yes, audience, would imply that he is not originally from Nashville. So, Matt, tell us about the early Matt Rogers music years, as well as when you moved to Nashville and what prompted it.
Well, I worked down in Macon, Georgia for a number of years. After undergrad college, I went back for a couple of years and was kind of working in the medical field and doing a number of different things. Went to a nursing program. I did x-ray, and I was working for a group of neurosurgeons at the time that I left. But I had a band that I put together in Macon, because if you know anything about Georgia, there's a rich music history, especially Macon, Georgia. From Capricorn record days from the late 60s into the 80s, with Allman Brothers Band, Marshall Tucker Band, Little Richard, Otis Redding, James Brown. I mean, there's just tons of music history in Macon, Georgia. And there's lots of venues to play, and there's lots of players that are still hanging out there. So I was gigging anywhere that would let me in. Started with just the acoustic, and started writing more and more songs and put a band together. And then we started playing a lot more shows, and they started getting further and further away from Macon, Georgia. And it was getting where it was kind of tough to get back from Chicago at 10 or 11 o'clock on a Sunday night and being dead tired from the road and having to be in surgery at 6 a.m. on Monday morning. So, that final little bit of approval that I got was winning that Georgia Country Music Award. I was Artist of the Year in 2015, and that's the year I moved up. June 1st, 2015, just had my 9-year anniversary of being in Nashville full time. My goal was to not have to do anything else. Like, I made a promise to myself if I was moving to Nashville, it was to do music full time and go all in.
Wow. But had you been making trips back and forth to Nashville, or was it I just up and moved one day and didn't know a soul when I got to Nashville?
I had been coming quite a bit. So I started coming up quite a bit in probably 2012. And by 2013, 2014, I was probably coming once a month.
Wow.
I was coming often. I was coming to write. I was coming and recording demos, singing some demos for different publishing houses. The Georgia connection's kind of weird because it doesn't really matter what level anybody's at. If they find out you're from Georgia, everybody kind of gets along. It's kind of a cool thing. But I had gone to college with a guy named Kalen Garner, who came here. He was a year or two older than me, and he came here straight out of college. And we reconnected, and he introduced me to a lot of the first people I met here and are still my dear friends that I write with and work with and do all of that kind of stuff with. So it's a full circle moment there.
I got to say, I love the whole backstory about the medical background, which audience, Matt and I have met each other, but I did not know about that background. And it kind of makes me think, Matt, of our mutual friend Russell Sutton, who, audience, if you never heard my interview with him, go back to episode 528. He was working for many years at Dell Computers, and now here he is, a Nashville songwriter. So everybody has some pretty amazing stories of how they got to Nashville. But Matt, were you one of these, I was playing and singing at, 5 years old kind of thing, my folks were into music, or was this just kind of you in a vacuum immersing yourself in music as a young boy?
I have a pretty musical family. I have to admit, my uncle had a band that was very well known in the Southeast for a number of years. And I grew up in the Baptist church, so there's some singing always happening at the Baptist church. So I had, an early garage band, and then I kind of did youth praise and worship band. And I was just so busy through those years. In high school, I played every sport, and I did one act play, and I did literary, and I did all of the things.
Wow.
And when I went to college, I was just concentrating on one sport. I did track and field in college, and I also was in the choir in college. And it gave me a lot more time to play guitar and to write songs and started gigging a little bit for beer and hot wings. And it's kind of one of those things that's always been there, and it took till 2015 for it to click that I could do it for a career.
But I admire you for saying it gave me more time to play the guitar, because all I'm hearing is, wait a minute, you were doing choir, you were doing track and field, you have all your classes to keep up with, and oh, by the way, you somehow had time to also play guitar and try to find places to perform. So hats off to you, because that's usually a time when, a young man or a young lady will say, okay, I'm just going to kind of buckle down on my studies and, at most maybe pick up a part-time job to have some money coming in. And for you, it was, oh no, if I'm awake, I'm doing something productive.
Yeah, I've never shied away from being busy. I try to stay busy even to this day. I feel like if you're not doing something that makes it move forward, then you're kind of wasting time.
Wow. That's a good motto. Here's another highlight that actually furthers something I did mention at the start of this episode. During the intro, I said that Matt's top five songs on Spotify alone have a combined total of over 1 million streams. But overall, meaning not just those five songs and not just Spotify, Matt's music has gained over 4 million streams. Matt, for openers, congratulations. But secondly, having just heard about your early years in Georgia, I have asked guests on this show before if they ever could have imagined getting to a point like that where they are now, and the overwhelming majority of them say something like, no, not in my wildest dreams. This is just amazing. Although I do remember someone kind of recently saying, yes, of course I could have imagined it because I'm that driven and I won't stop. And those are the kind of goals I set for myself. So again, Matt, 4 million streams. Do you stop and think about the indie artists out there who think, heck, I'd be thrilled with 400,000? Could you have imagined getting to this level? What's your perspective on all of this?
Like I said, it was kind of a light bulb moment. When I decided I was going to do it for a career, I was going all in. And I set the bar a lot higher than where I'm currently at. And I set goals a lot bigger than where I'm currently at. So I certainly hoped to have reached certain levels. But, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm behind schedule. So it goes back and forth. I'm proud of the things I've accomplished, certainly. I've been very proud of the music that I've put out and the people I've been able to work with and write songs with and all of the things that go along that. You know, you have to take that in. You have to take the little victories too. You know, it's crazy to think that your guitar and your songs have taken you overseas, and I've been able to play in Europe and do some of the things that I've gotten to do. That's a humbling thought, but it's also not where I'm deciding to stop either. You know what I mean? My goals and what I'm striving for is a lot bigger than this.
But what is your advice, though, to the audience member who is considering moving to Nashville and says, yeah, I've got some goals that I've set for myself? Because there's a difference, as you know, Matt, you've been there long enough, you see the people who come and go, and we hear the statistics about the number of people that move to Nashville and the number of people that move out of Nashville. So what is your advice? What do you think has been a big part of you getting from 2015 to 2024? And I'll keep going back to 4 million streams.
Yeah, I don't know. This is the question you get asked a lot. It's, you meet a young person in a town that's not Nashville, and man, I'm really interested in doing music. I'm really interested in being a songwriter. I'm really interested in X, Y, and Z, doing music for a career. What should I do? If you're asking permission, you're already behind. Like, you just have to do it. You just have to start. And it's really a hard thing to describe because you don't see it until, like, for me, it's been a real hindsight thing, you know? But I didn't really say, hey, man, how do I do this? What am I doing? I just went and asked places if I could play.
Wow.
And then, you know, when they do it, they go, you know, you should try this bar. You should try this place. You should try here. And it feeds itself. So you have to start somewhere. And it's awful humbling. Those first handful of years, you're like, man, I don't have a clue what I'm doing. But there's people in this town that are heads of labels that don't get it right, but 30% of the time. So I don't think anybody really knows what they're doing.
I love all that advice, though, especially the part about if you're asking for permission, you're already behind. Because if you do that, you're going to show up in Nashville and you're going to be asking permission for everything over there. And you're going to be holding yourself back and holding yourself back and holding yourself back. And in the process, you're going to be missing out on so many opportunities. And yes, at the same time, I'm glad that you acknowledged, Matt, that you are going to have times where you're going to go, man, am I any good at this? Like, I'm just not getting the breaks. I'm not getting the phone calls. And if you stick with it and you do the goal setting that you talked about and you are determined and you're not going to give up, the breaks will come and the connections will be made. And I love that you pointed out that some of them will eventually start to say, have you tried calling this place? Have you gone over to this place?
Yeah, exactly. You know, you kind of develop alligator skin. You know, it's got to get thick. Because you get beaten down sometimes, you know, you second guess yourself, you get a lot of no's, you get a lot of people that pass on what you're doing. But it's just about that perseverance part. Like, if you really think you can do this and you really want to do this, then you'll find a way.
Yeah. Then why are you asking me if you should move there? Pack your bags and I'll see you soon. I want to read off a whole bunch of songwriting award credits, and then this will end with a question. The songwriting award credits are as follows. NSAI/CMT. Music City Songstar, American Songwriter, Songwriting University, and Mid-Atlantic Song Contest. Matt, as much as I'm sure you're thrilled to have all those on your resume, is it a case of, you know what, Bruce, those are great, but until you also say number one song as a writer and or number one song as an artist, they're just in there with some of the other highlights we've talked about so far? Or is it, heck no, each and every one of what you just read off are really quite special to me?
I go back and forth on that as well. It's good to get those little pick-me-ups along the ways because sometimes those have come when I've really been doubting myself. But also, you have to remind yourself, it's not about followers. It's not about streams. It's not about awards. If you're doing this, art is subjective. You know, maybe a majority of people don't get it. You're doing it to reach that one person that gets it. You're doing it because you have something to say. And that's something I have to remind myself all the time, because social media can wear you down. You know, you see people with massive numbers that are doing all these things, and you have to remember it's not about that. It's not about that at all. And that keeps me pretty level-headed sometimes. I really think I moved here because I had a story to tell that nobody else could tell, that I had something to say that nobody else was going to say. And sometimes you're still figuring that out when you're writing songs, and you're always trying to hone your craft. I mean, like we talk about, you know, just like you said earlier, Russell Sutton just got off the road with that guy. He's a fantastic songwriter, and he has really developed what he wanted to say and how he approaches songwriting. And he's on fire right now. You know, he's had a couple of number ones, and he's got several singles this year, which I'm sure will turn into more number ones. I think that's really what it's about. It's about pushing yourself. It's between your ears is where the challenge is.
Mm. I love what you said, though, about it's not about followers, because I think you're right that so many artists do get caught up in, okay, I'm almost there, and they hit 10,000 or 20,000 or 50,000 or 100,000 followers, and all of a sudden it's like they're quote-unquote going to work each day just to see if they can get their, I'll say, Instagram following, for example, up, and you go, wait a minute, if that's all you're in this for, you could have stayed back in the city that you're from and done a cooking profile or a makeup channel or whatever it is. This isn't about building up followers. I mean, yes, okay, eventually in the long run, you need the followers. You want them to show up at your shows, buy your music, etc. But you're giving us gold here. It's between your ears. I mean, that's a gem right there. That's what people need to hold on to and not get distracted by those other things that at the same time, you know, like you said, yeah, it's nice to post on social media and say, hey, Music City Songstar, you know, just acknowledge me for this, or I just got this from Mid-Atlantic Song Contest. And it does kind of tell you that, you know, when you're just starting out, your family's going to tell you how great you are. Well, at some point in time, you need an uninterested third party to come along and say, here you go, American Songwriter, we're giving Matt Rogers the profile here and the song that he's done.
Yeah, you know, it's those little pick-me-ups, like I said, they come and go, you know, just when you think, why can't I get anything done? You get that phone call to go open for somebody, or, man, are my songs really any good? And somebody like American Songwriter gives you an award. And it just keeps you grinding. But I said, if you're focusing on that, if that's your primary focus, you're kind of in it for the wrong reasons. I think if you keep honing your craft and you figure out what you want to say and you figure out the best way to say it and you start honing that craft to where you're writing the songs that you're supposed to be writing, all the rest of it falls into place.
So on a related note then, your music has been featured on editorial playlists at Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Pandora. Is that validation for you? Is that acceptance? Meaning, do all those placements give you the confidence that, okay, I'm on the right track here. People are noticing what I'm doing and it's connecting with them.
It's certainly a blessing when you find out a song's got placement, because you're going to get to reach a little bit wider audience than you organically can just screaming it from your Instagram page. So that's a cool thing. But I also don't understand how any of that works. So I'm just always happy when someone does give me a little love and give me a little extra reach for the song, because I have no idea how any of that works.
So I'm trying to decide on my own, and it's better just to ask you, do you consider yourself a songwriter first or an artist first?
I've always been of the opinion you can't have one without the other.
Mm.
I truly believe that. Most of the songwriters that I know that you would consider just songwriters, they all started out as artists or wanted to be an artist when they moved here. Sometimes, maybe not, but I think if you were a songwriter and you were writing great songs, you are an artist, whether you admit it to yourself or not.
Wow. I like that. Folks, in a minute, I'm going to give you all of Matt's online destinations as well as a bunch of places where you can go see him live. But first, Matt, the night after you and I are recording this, you are performing at the famous Bluebird Cafe there in Nashville. Is that the first time you will play there? And if so, tell us about the nerves and or the excitement. And if it's not going to be your first time there, tell us about the nerves and the excitement.
Yeah, it's obviously hallowed ground, right? It's a very, very special place. It's always an honor to get to go play there. I have played it several times throughout the years. When I first started out, you know, you do an open mic, and I don't exactly remember their criteria, but I had to do several open mics before they gave me an opportunity to put a round together. And since then, I've been able to put some really great rounds together, and I keep getting some invites back every blue moon. But man, it is such an incredible place. And no matter if we're playing in the round, if we're playing on the stage, where however they have the room set up, I always like to look, because in the back left corner of the room, there's a big picture of Kris Kristofferson. And I kind of just like to look at him while I'm playing.
Mm.
For whatever reason, it gives me a little bit of nerves, but it's also like, you know, the greats are looking down at you.
Wow. Wow. When I asked you before, do you consider yourself a songwriter first or an artist first? You could have said yes, jokingly, but I do wonder, taking us back to your early years in Georgia, were you a singer first? Did you learn to songwrite first? Did you learn to play guitar first? And for that matter, were all of those singing, songwriting, and guitar playing, were all those self-taught, or did you take lessons at any point in one or more of those?
I definitely had lessons on instruments early on. I started with piano, which I learned just enough to move to guitar. I feel like piano is such a great building block, though. I wish I would have stuck with that. But, you know, the Allman Brothers were from Macon, Georgia, so I wanted to play guitar. I didn't want to be playing piano as much, but I've grown towards it as I've gotten older. I'm not very great on the piano, but it's so good for like learning scales, learning chord building, all of the things. But I immediately went to guitar, and there was a guy in Gray, Georgia named Glenn Harrell that was kind of my guitar teacher for a number of years. And then the rest, I kind of had some fragmented learning where I was kind of hitting the building blocks at different times. But you kind of have that day where everything is a light bulb and you see how everything on the fretboard connects with each other. So I was very fortunate to have those kind of things. Like I said, in the Baptist church, you just sing. There's lots of hymns every Sunday. So, you know, you do that, and then you get in the choir. Then you have, you know, like a youth praise worship band or any of those things, and you end up kind of learning to sing. I got a lot more dialed into singing in college because I was in a choir there.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to understand parts and harmony and things like that, and it helps you kind of breathe and you sing scales and those kind of things. But yeah, I wrote a couple songs I remember in high school, middle school, high school, and then I didn't really do much after that. And then in college, I started writing a few more. And when I moved back home and had my band, I started writing a ton of them. I don't know why. And it just was something that was coming out of me, you know. And I didn't really realize until I started coming to Nashville a lot that everybody didn't just write their own songs. I didn't co-writing and writing for other artists and all that was kind of a foreign thought to me. But yeah, it's just been really, really cool to understand the art of writing songs and the craft of writing songs and how people approach it and learning little things you could put in your toolbox and knowing when to use that tool in certain song. It's really is a cool thing.
Well, case in point, do you write 100% on the guitar, or if there's a piano in the room, might you occasionally stroll over to the piano and try something out over there?
I feel like I'm a lot more fluent on the guitar, and most of the time when I'm going into a writing room, you know, some of the publishing houses down on the road, they will have keyboards and things like that in the room. I just feel like I'm a lot more fluent and know exactly where I want to go on a guitar.
Mm.
Definitely a guitar melody driven guy. But a lot of times I will write a melody in my head with no instrument and then go to the instrument and figure out where it needs to be.
Mm.
I feel like that keeps me making more fresh melodies instead of trying to be redundant over a certain chord.
Wow. Wow. I like that. I am joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Nashville by singer, songwriter, guitar player Matt Rogers. Visit his official website at mattrogerscountry.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. If you are hearing this interview within the first 8 days of its release, get on Spotify and pre-save Whiskey Don't, which is Matt's new single coming out next week, Friday, August 2nd. And if you're hearing this after that, go get it. His original music is available through Apple Music and other online digital music retailers. By the way, you can also support him with some really cool merch that's available through the shop section of mattrogerscountry.com. He is all over social media. Look for the links, the logos on his website to go engage with Matt on the likes of Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok. Check the tour section of mattrogerscountry.com for details on the likes of upcoming dates in Nashville, Augusta, Georgia, Greenville, South Carolina, Highlands, North Carolina, St. Petersburg, Florida, Denmark for Nashville Nights International, the Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival in the Florida Panhandle, Decatur, Alabama, and more. Matt is someone who is extremely well-connected. If you are trying to make your way through the business and find yourself looking at others and asking, how does he know so many people? Or how has she gotten to meet so many people? Help yourself out and start building up your connections by talking to people, actual voice calls, through the OWL app. OWL, like the bird, except with two W's and two L's, is a social networking platform that connects people instantly through private one-on-one audio calls. Are there music and other entertainment industry professionals on there? Yes, but there are folks from so many other industries: social media, AI, technology, entrepreneurship, web services, and a whole lot more. Stop asking, why not me? And make connections happen thanks to the OWL app. Here's how. On my podcast website, nhte.net, tap or click into the news section and then look for the article in there under the headline, Help Now a Phone App Call Away. The OWL app is free to download, and I have links in that article to get it from the App Store or Google Play. Plus, I have my invitation code in that article because you will need that as you're setting up the app on your phone. It's a required field. Get on OWL and make valuable connections for your career. Matt, before all that, you were talking about the Bluebird Cafe. Equally exciting, though, has to be some of these festivals that are coming up. In particular, I mentioned Nashville Nights International, which will be in mid-September in Denmark, and then the Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival in the Florida Panhandle. Two very different types of events due to one being international, yet still a chance both times for you to play only original music and do so along fellow songwriters from Nashville as well as outside of Music City.
Festivals are so cool to me. For the main reason that I love festivals is that I'm such a fan of other songwriters and of music in general. And most of the time when you're on the road, if you're doing your own shows or whatever else you're doing, you don't get to see other acts or meet other acts or things like that. So it's always great getting to meet other songwriters or either seeing your friends that you love their music perform and do their own stuff. It's really, really my favorite thing about festivals. Very fortunate to be going back to the Nashville Nights International Songwriters Festival in Denmark. It'll be my third year in a row doing that festival.
Wow.
Our mutual friend Blue Foley is heavily involved in that festival. And I have actually partnered with Blue and Lee Tucker and Jim Kaufman on the Nashville Nights domestic side, where we're going to be trying to build that same kind of thing for songwriters here at home. And it's something I'm super passionate about. And man, it's so much fun getting together with your buddies and playing songs.
Yeah, and folks, episode 525 back in March was Blue Foley talking a lot about Nashville Nights International. We recorded that on location in Nashville, which gave me an opportunity to meet Matt in person. And the Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival is, I'm going to say, more traditional, Matt, in the sense that, as strange as it sounds for us here in America and those of us in the music community, when you go to Denmark, they don't understand what a Nashville Writers' Night looks like, what it is. And so y'all have done a wonderful job of bringing that over there and introducing them. And from everything I've heard, it's a listening room environment every time you play.
Yeah, it's really kind of neat for people that aren't familiar with that particular setup that we do, where you have multiple people on stage with just an acoustic guitar, and they tell a story about where a song that never existed came from, where that inspiration came from. And they'll tell you a little story back behind it or about themselves or any number of different approaches, and then perform that song live. And you get to hear it in an intimate setting that you would have never got to hear, say, by one of your biggest acts maybe playing in that stadium. It's just really a whole nother environment and a whole lot more of an intimate feel. And, people really seem to love it once they experience that atmosphere and getting to consume music that way.
Yeah, and I should clarify for those who are here stateside and maybe in the Southeast and or thinking of taking a beach vacation in October, the Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival, they do have some shows that are a listening room atmosphere, but I think there's also a misconception that songwriters festivals are these big, huge events with thousands and thousands of people and a high admission cost. And the overwhelming majority of the shows at the Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival, you don't have to pay. So these are great opportunities, whether you're in Denmark, whether you're in the Florida Panhandle or some of the other festivals, to get to hear the stories told, to get to see the people who wrote them, and to, in some cases, have yourself a great vacation alongside of it. Speaking of live performances, back in the intro, I read off just some of the many big names, Matt, that you have had the distinction of opening up for: Chris Stapleton, Walker Hayes, Jake Owen, Cole Swindell, and Brothers Osborne, among others. I would love to do a teaching moment here for anyone in the audience who is an aspiring performer. As much as it's always fun to ask a guest to pick out a highlight from those type of experiences, can you give us instead one lesson that you've taken away from all those great opener opportunities, whether it's something you got directly from one of those big artists or just something you picked up on your own?
You never want to sing after Chris Stapleton, I can tell you that for a fact. Nah, that's there's a learning experience every time. You know, you have to understand your role, which is you're supporting that main act that the majority of the people are there to see. It's a different experience, it seems, every time. There's been a lot of guys that I've got to meet that have treated me super great. There's been a few that have not treated us very great at all. But you just try to revel in that experience and learn something from it every time, whether it's, you know, what you need to bring, how fast you need to get in and out of the way. Mm. How, you know, there's always a list of things that you can kind of learn from, and every time I'm in that scenario.
I want you folks to please look at Matt's website, and the list just goes on and on. The intro could have gone so much longer, but so many more others that he's open for. So Matt, I think what you're saying is just when you think you got it down, you're going to open for someone else, and it's going to be an entirely different list of procedures. And so what's applicable to one artist may be completely different for the next. Yes?
Absolutely. Because I mean, like I said, you're supporting them and it's their fan base, and you're lucky enough to get for them to share their fan base with you, but they all are into them because of their music. Your style isn't exactly the same as each person you ever open for. So you have to figure out the best way to connect. And that's always a challenge that I really look forward to, as far as like building out the set list and building out the moments that we're going to do X, Y, and Z in the show, to figure out how to capitalize on that the most. And a couple that we haven't talked about, it, and some of the legacy acts. I've been really fortunate to do a couple shows with Clint Black and like Shenandoah and Clay Walker and some of these guys that I grew up on. And it's so cool to see them out there just still absolutely crushing.
Yeah, and that's got to be something that's just so enjoyable. And it's also a case, folks, of the more and more that we list off all these names, you have to understand, if you're doing this thinking, if I could get on the same bill with insert artist name here and meet him or meet them, Matt, I'm sure you've had cases where you never even met the headliner, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. There's times that you just have to do your role, which is you got to go out there and you got to play your 30 or 45 minutes and then you've got to get out of the way.
I want to make sure I give you a chance to talk about the various brand partners you have: Durango, Breedlove Guitars, 64 Audio, Clayton Custom. There is so much involved in being an independent artist, from the songwriting to the live shows to recording and releasing music to things like this very interview that we're doing. And then, yes, securing meaningful partnerships like you have done. Can you share with us about that as well as those companies I mentioned?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've been fortunate that most of these partnerships have been with me from really early on, either around or right shortly after I moved to Nashville. And we've just had our relationship grow together, which has been really, really great. Breedlove Guitars make acoustic guitars, and they are some of the best in the world, in my opinion. I play several of them, and man, they are just fantastic instruments. And they've treated me so well over there through the years, as well as Durango Boots, which has been in my corner the most by offering lots of boots to give away when I'm trying to promote something of my own, by buying banners and wrapping trailers and all kind of things for on the road support, for marketing and promotional material stuff, to keeping great boots in my closet and in my band's closet. They've been such a great proponent. And the more you get into this, it's really easy to go down the rabbit hole and really get into gear and be into a whole bunch of different gear and think that this one piece of gear is going to make you get better when it really boils down to practice. But it gets down to a point where you do have to have that minimum level of gear, and 64 audio makes probably the best in-ear monitors in the game. Mm. Been very fortunate to have, you know, two or three sets of those over the years, which protect your hearing, which means you can do this longer because you can hear what you're doing. So I've just been very fortunate, you know, to have those kind of brands that after I talked to them and applied to their artist roster, they agreed to help me out and be part of what I was doing. That just gives you, like I said, another little boost to kind of keep you going because, well, they saw something here, so maybe I should just keep my nose to the grindstone and keep on chugging along.
Well, and because you know that they are getting besieged with artist applications from so many others, so the fact that they see something in Matt Rogers and say, this is someone whose music we want to align with, you're right, that's one of those small victories. I want to go back, though, to you saying Durango, boots in my closet and in my band's closet. So I read off a long list of live shows that you have coming up. Does that mean that people are going to see you live and it's always going to be a full band show? Or is it, you know what, Bruce, it just varies from one to the next, whether it's solo Matt or whether it's full band?
Obviously, the Songwriters Festivals, I would say you're not going to see any band there, but I actually am playing a full band set in Denmark this year, which is going to be really exciting. But yeah, there's several band dates that are on the schedule. There's several, you know, songwriter type events as well. You go to mattrogerscountry.com/tour and it'll specify there most of the time whether it's a songwriter type event or if it's a full band rock and roll show.
Okay. Okay. I read something about 1 RPM distribution and releasing new music every 6 to 8 weeks. Is that current? And if so, walk us through what that all means, what that partnership actually entails.
Yeah, I had a specific distribution deal through Warner Music shortly after the pandemic and through 2022, that is. I put a full length record out during that period of time and a few other singles. But I was looking to be a little bit more independent and have a little bit more control over what I was doing, and was very fortunate to partner with 1RPM. They're a great distribution company here in town. That's who actually puts your music on Spotify and Apple and Pandora and YouTube and all of the places. I have a great relationship with those guys, and they kind of let me do exactly how I want to do things as far as when I want to pre-save and when I want a song to come out, and try to help me get placement on editorial list and all of the things. You know, they are really, really great. They are independent minded, so they prefer working with independent people. It's just been a great relationship.
Yeah, and I think it's important that you mentioned some of those add-ons, because for the indie artist out there who's saying, well, I can just do it myself through DistroKid or TuneCore, right. However, they're not going to try to get you on playlists, and they're not going to have the relationships and be able to open doors that someone like 1RPM is going to do. So yes, you can try to do it on your own, and most do, but when you can get something like what Matt got and have someone like that in your corner, and not to mention someone to go, Matt, and physically sit in their office and talk to and really get them understanding your music and really getting behind it, is a whole lot different from a website where you're never going to interact with a live person.
Yeah, it's great to have somebody that you can just contact when things go awry as well, because that does happen. You know, I forget exactly what the number is, but it is a staggering amount of songs that get released every Friday. And, you know, one of the guys over at 1RPM, Tim Whipperman, he's got a pretty historic career. I mean, he's been the head of, I think, 2 major labels here in Nashville. He's just been around forever and really knows what he's doing. So it's great to have those kind of folks working your songs, you know?
So on that note, I've mentioned a couple of times that next week, Friday, your newest single, Whiskey Don't, will be released. Just tell us about that song, what the song is about, and who you wrote that with.
I wrote that with one of my favorite co-writers and one of my good buddies, Eric Erdman. Man, he's such a great guitar player and a great songwriter. And he's kind of on fire right now. He's writing a bunch of songs with those boys, the Red Clay Strays, that he's known forever. And they're having a real moment and just kind of taking off and going to the moon. He got to go see Red Clay Strays open for the Rolling Stones in a stadium, which is pretty cool. But yeah, Eric is an awesome guy. He's been doing this a while, and he's just so dadgum talented. And it's an idea that I had, and we got together one day and we were kicking around some ideas, and we were talking about all the things that whiskey can do, because there's a lot of country songs that have what whiskey can do, but this one's kind of about the ones that whiskey doesn't do.
All right. And folks, like I said, if you're hearing this interview in the first 8 days of its release, pre-save that song. Otherwise, if you're listening on or after August 2nd, then go and get Whiskey Don't. Matt, I have to ask, I saw a picture you just posted on Instagram of you and the late Charlie Daniels, and as if that in itself wasn't enough, it was location-stamped Grand Ole Opry. Too cool. Too cool. Tell us all about the circumstances surrounding whenever and whatever that occasion was.
I've got a fantastic relationship with the Opry, and I've been able to go hang out there and be backstage and be there for certain events, you know, and I've met some incredible folks, as you can imagine, there. That is the mother church of country music. You know, that's where the playing field is level. It's more about the history and the hallowed ground there than it is about anything else. And obviously, Charlie Daniels was an incredible hero of mine. I mean, he's an incredible player, songwriter. He was such an amazing artist and entertainer, even all the way up till he passed, you know, 82 years old. I don't know if there's a musical act on the planet that could have followed him after he did Devil Went Down to Georgia. I don't think there was anybody that could have followed him. He was just an amazing person, but was very fortunate to get to know him and get to have several conversations with him, you know, and he would, you know, pull me back in his dressing room, and he'd pull out the guitar, and we'd talk guitar, we'd talk songs, and talk about the industry and what it is to be an artist, and just the amount of information. I just tried to be a sponge and just drink it all in. You know, it obviously was painful. You know, we just had the 4-year anniversary of him passing, but man, the shoes that he left to be filled. What a patriot. What an incredible artist and entertainer. I'm just very glad that I got to meet him and see it in person, because I learned more from him than anybody else.
Oh man, I'm getting choked up listening to you. That in itself is a wonderful tribute. It's a wonderful tribute. And I apologize, audience. I was a Charlie Daniels fan myself, and oh wow, that really hit me.
Yeah, it got me a little bit too, just thinking about it.
Matt, when a young artist, and maybe even not young, meets someone of that stature, and you have one chance to meet that person, I think that person just kind of expects someone to say to them, hey, if you got one piece of advice for me, is that, yeah, Bruce, you just got to do it? Is it, you got to read the room? Is it, don't ask them for one piece, they may give you a whole bunch? What's your advice? Because I think a lot of people do get more and more opportunities nowadays to meet people of that stature. And out of respect, you almost feel like, is it respectful that I should ask them, or is it respectful that they probably get this asked all the time, and maybe I should just say, it's a pleasure to meet you, thank you for all the music?
Yeah, I guess you have to kind of read the scenario, take the social cues. I've always tried to be cognizant of that, because sometimes they're in a hurry, sometimes they're having a bad day, or things aren't going their way. You know, sound check went too late, or piece of gear went down, or any number of things, you know. So I think you have to be pretty cognizant of that. But it is, so many of them, I feel like, are wells of knowledge. And I try not to ever say, what's one piece? You know, I try to slide it in as, man, I'm really trying to do this, and you're a hero, and is there any advice that you have?
Yeah, I
and
like
sometimes that.
That
makes it not so on the point, where they feel like they have to deliver some Yoda grand master wizard knowledge to you, you know, because sometimes they tell you the subtlest things, and it's, when you figure it out, you're like, holy mackerel. What a piece of advice that was, you know. I had a hit writer I met at the Bluebird during my open mic days named Hugh Moffat that told me, dare to be ordinary. And I kind of chewed on it for a while, and when I finally got to talk to him again, it was exactly what I thought, which he meant, you know, dare to be ordinary. Everybody thinks they have to be something they're not, but God made each of us inherently unique. So when you think you're being ordinary and you're being plain and you're being boring, that's the only time that you're truly unique, is because you're being who you are. Wow. And you take that to the writing room, you take that as into your artistry, you take that into your social media presence, everything. And it makes so much sense. So that was one great piece of advice I got.
Yeah. Great insights. Great insights. We're going to close today with another one of Matt's original songs, one called You're My Hallelujah. Matt, before I let you go and we hear that track, share with the audience first all about this one, if you would, please.
So this is a crazy story. This is actually my first ever outside cut song. So that means this is a song that I did not write. When I left that deal I told you about and started working with 1RPM, I also uploaded new management. So I'm with Balda Stern Group, and a guy named Matt McClure, who produced an EP that I did in 2017, is now producing me again. He's had great success as a producer, and he's also managing me along with his wife, Renee McClure, and Alex Kidd at Balda Stern. And there's mountains of music that I have that I'm sitting on, because we're on a crazy release schedule. We're putting music out every 8 weeks.
Mm.
So I said, before we go through all of my songs, are there any you want me to hear that you'd be interested in me recording? And he let me hear a handful of songs. And the first time I heard this song, I said, oh my gosh, who is that? Like, who's on this? Is this available for me to do something with?
Mm-hmm.
And he told me about it. And it's even cooler because of who all is involved in it. So obviously, Matt McClure, my producer, is a co-writer on the song. Well, there's another guy named Nate Smith, who's absolutely on fire. I think he's had two or three number ones in the last year and a half. There's a hit writer that's a buddy of mine named Marty Dotson that's on the song. But I've been writing a lot at Curb over the last handful of years. And there was a guy that I met that was really close with Matt McClure that I never got to write with, that I always really looked up to, and it was Kyle Jacobs. And he's also on the song, who's, you know, Kelly Pickler's late husband. So it was a really special thing because I admired him and he was such good friends with Matt, and they all wanted the song to be out where people could hear it. And it was kind of cool that I was bestowed the responsibility and honor to record that song and be the one that actually put it out. Because Nate sang an incredible demo of the song, and obviously he's a great singer and he's got a lot going on, and it, I guess he just did not have room to fit it on his record. And he was very on board and very cool with giving me his blessing. And he told me that I, you know, sang the crap out of it, and he just really loved the version that we did. So it was kind of special for that to be my first outside cut, being a song that I didn't write. That was a little nerve wracking for me. You know, you want to do the song justice. You want everybody to be proud of what comes out.
Mm.
So that was a neat moment for me.
Yeah, no doubt. I love everything that you shared about it in audience. I promise I won't be talking over this one. But Matt, first, let me thank you. We were overdue to do this. It was great to finally get you on Now Hear This Entertainment. I'm going to congratulate you in advance on the new single coming out next week, Friday, August 2nd. And we'll look forward to seeing you at some live shows sometime soon down the road.
Sure hope to see you soon, Bruce. Thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. With that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to singer, songwriter, guitar player Matt Rogers. Do visit his official website at mattrogerscountry.com. As I mentioned earlier, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Keep in mind that next week, Friday, August 2nd, Matt's newest single, Whiskey Don't, will be released. If you are listening prior to then, be sure to pre-save it. Otherwise, go get it and other music from Matt's catalog from the likes of Apple Music and other online digital music retailers. Remember, too, when you're on his website, to check out the shop section for some cool merch. I have followed Matt on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and I know he would appreciate you doing the same. We did not get to talk about his YouTube channel, which I mentioned in the intro, has more than 1.1 million combined video views. Subscribe to that and then watch and like the videos he has there. Remember that he is also on TikTok. Tell Matt that you heard him and his music on Now Hear This Entertainment. You heard him talk about Nashville Nights International in mid-September in Denmark and the Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival at the start of October. However, as you've been hearing me say, there are lots of other dates and locations where you'll have the opportunity to go see Matt perform live. Check the tour section of his website for all those details. Folks, this is not pre-recorded, meaning each week at the end, I'm saying in the moment as I'm ending each interview that I do truly hope that you like this show, that you're enjoying what I'm doing every week on the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you've made it all the way to the end, thank you for having stuck with Matt and I. And I'm going to assume that that means that you do like the podcast. You can take action to let me know that you appreciate the work that I do to keep making this show happen every week, every month, more than 10 years without missing once. by going on my podcast website, nhte.net, and then using the yellow Buy Me a Coffee logo that you will see there. This is not a sponsor. It's not affiliated with any brand or chain. It's just a fun way for you to send your support, your thanks to me, including a note that I will see when you utilize that option. You can also just head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. That's going to do it for episode 545. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Matt Rogers. This is the one he just talked about. It's called You're My Hallelujah.
I was lost as a man could be, a dreamer all dried out of dreams, drinking through the same old scene till you brought me to my knees. The minute that you said my name, I threw the old me away. Yeah, I could say you rescued me. You're my hallelujah, you're my sweet amen, my Saturday night revival, my Sunday morning hymn. Found my amazing grace, God knows I can use it. Girl, your faith in me, I don't know how you do it. You're my hallelujah, you're my hallelujah. Say true love conquers all, so I couldn't help but fall. It's like a stained glass altar call, waking up next to